Well, I do get messages and things, people kind of wanting to know, you know, what the secret recipe is, or how to kind of fast track everything, or how to learn everything at once. You know, there's no just like learning it overnight. And I think a large part of maybe why we've found success is because we know how to take initiative. Like if we don't know how to do something, we'll Google it or we'll buy a course that explains how to do it. You know, I had no idea 2 years ago how to market my blog on Pinterest, and Pinterest is such a great source for blogs. So I bought like a $200 or $300 course and I learned how to do it. So I had to invest time and money into learning that part of my business. So I think some of it's initiative and some of it is kind of seeing that investment for what it's worth and going for it.
Welcome to the Stokecast, where each week we bring you an inspiring athlete, adventurer, or entrepreneur and dig into their stories and strategies for balancing work, life, and adventure while having fun and making a difference. I'm Jonathan Ronzio.
And I'm Emily Holland. Thanks for joining us today.
Let's get to it. Hey, welcome back to the Stokecast. It is episode 57. We are still crushing these on a weekly basis, and thank you for hanging around or stopping by if this is your first time, and if it is, be sure to hit subscribe. This is going to be a killer, killer episode. We've got the authors of Roaming America, a new book to drop on Amazon and probably everywhere else that you can buy books. It's a coffee table book about visiting all of the U.S. national parks, and that is by Renee Honnell and Matthew Honnell, who are bloggers, photographers, authors, Instagram influencers, Sony Alpha ambassadors, Aussies living in Seattle, all things rad and adventurous, traveling as a couple, and damn, did we have a good conversation.
Dude, they were great. I was so impressed with them. I knew that they were going to be great because they're super smart about their branding and the way that they present themselves online. I could just kind of tell almost, but I was really excited to have some firsts where we had our first couple, we had our first Australians on, which was really exciting, but they are just hardworking, hustling, but still obviously getting outdoors and enjoying it as much as the rest of us. So please enjoy our conversation with Renee and Matthew Honnell.
All right. On the Stokecast, I am so excited to introduce and to welcome on Renee and Matthew Honnell. Thank you so much for joining us. What's going on?
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, we're excited. Go for it, Emily. First, drop them with the first. Make it happen.
I know, just letting our listeners know, because we dropped it before we started recording, but first couple interviews. This is going to be fun, and I think we can probably get into some interesting topic areas that we have skirted around in the past, but haven't necessarily dived right into. So this is starting off really well. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Well, guys, so you have some crazy exciting things going on right now. We were emailing back and forth earlier today and yesterday about scheduling and stuff like that. What is happening in your life that's causing the mayhem to happen?
Yeah, well, we actually just bought our first home. So we moved to Washington about 15 months ago. And we've just fallen in love with living here, as we thought we probably would. And we decided, okay, it's probably about time to be adults and get a house. So we
got sick of paying rent for a place we're not at for 7 months of the year, so we may as well pay to own our own place rather than just throw that money away.
Yeah, so anyway, it came up, things happened a little bit quicker than we expected. So on Sunday, just being, we found out that an offer was accepted for a house that we'd chosen. So that was really exciting. And we've just been, you know, running around, signing paperwork, and meanwhile trying to run our business. And yeah, it's been a little crazy.
Well, it sounds exciting. Yeah. Jonathan, you've experienced this recently.
I mean, I am so excited for you, but also I can totally empathize with the amount of work you have ahead of you that you don't even know yet. Like I'm 6 months into, being a new homeowner, and am on the road probably like, you know, at least half of every month as well. And then just coming back and having to like rip down wallpaper and upgrade electrical and just put up a fence and like painting rooms and figuring out, you know, refinishing furniture and getting furniture and all, like it's a endless project, massive project, but it is so exciting too. So I think you're probably deep into Pinterest now, right?
Yeah, we have a lot of Pinterest boards going on, and a lot of usually it's pretty sad, but mostly our conversations are generally about work, but they've kind of transitioned a little bit recently more to about the house. So yeah, it's been a bit funny.
Yeah, I guess we have to learn how to pull some weeds now. So
yeah, we have a garden.
Isn't that wild how like just your conversation shifts, you know? You get a dog and all you talk about is like, well, did the dog eat, did the dog go out, and then you get a house and it's like you're driving around different streets and neighborhoods and looking at like, oh, that's nice painting on their shutters, and that's a nice fence, and instead of like, oh, when are we going on the next trip?
Yeah. No joke. And it's a tough balance because we still have to, you know, we've got a business to run. We still have to focus so much of our attention to that. But at the same time, our closing date is in less than 30 days. So we don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, it's getting real.
That's awesome. Well, congrats again on that. So regarding your business and how you're still running that, let's talk a little bit about your business and kind of how that started. Like what kind of got you guys down this path of being this traveling couple, the photographers, influencers, marketers? I'd just love to hear that story.
Sure. So I guess where it all started was back in when we were living in Australia. We moved to America about 5 years ago. And before that, we were always big travelers. Renee convinced me to spend a lot of money on a trip that I wasn't quite sure about. Our first year out of high school, like 10 years ago now, and we went to
longer than that.
It's scary. We went to South America and did like a 2 month trip across South America, and yeah, it was amazing. We just kind of fell in love with travel then. And then a few trips later, we were going to America for a 3 month trip up the west coast through the mountains and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of said to Renee, it would be nice to get a nice camera and take some photos, and you know, just have better, you know, photos for our memories and make a photo book at the end or something like that. And yeah, before the trip even started, I'd already upgraded the camera twice, I think.
And got a bit obsessed.
Just got a bit obsessed with it. And long story short, we ended up moving to America years later. And
early 2015.
And we just kind of got jobs in what we were doing at the time. Renee was a speech therapist and I was an office admin. And yeah, I was working and it was fine. I never enjoyed my job. And one day I got let off just because I wasn't willing to come in on the weekends and do overtime. I preferred to be out doing camping and hiking, and that's the whole reason we moved to America in the first place, and they weren't happy with that. So yeah, I lost my job, and that kind of just sparked me to dedicate a lot of my time, instead of looking for another job that I didn't like, to try and focus on the things that I did and try and turn that into a career. So
yeah, and I guess at this point, to kind of rewind a little bit, we had been posting about our travels on Instagram for probably a year and a half or so. And we had like small Instagram followings. Like I think you probably had 10, 20,000 followers, and I had less. And we were just taking photos on weekends, and we were going on a lot of hiking adventures. And then essentially Matt would be taking a lot of photos and I'd kind of be sitting around watching him. So it was actually our anniversary in 2015. I think it was the April. He surprised me with my own camera.
I think I just got sick of her complaining about sitting around for 3 hours while I took photos at sunset. So
yeah. So he bought me a camera and he was like, I'm going to teach you how to use it. And I was excited about that because I'd only ever used a point and shoot and my phone and things like that. So essentially Matt taught me how to use a camera, and then very quickly we upgraded all our gear and we just got a lot better at it, a lot more confident with it. And then to kind of continue on that story, in mid 2016, I'd started my travel blog and we'd gained some more followers online and kind of had a little bit more of an online presence. And we decided to go to take a few months off and go traveling. And at that point, we didn't envision that we were necessarily taking our photography full time. Like, we knew we were, at least for those like 5 months or so of what we planned, but we didn't necessarily envision that it would go beyond that. We were kind of just winging it and seeing how we were going. So yeah, I quit my job. Matt was already doing photography and things full time, and we hit the road. And that was 3 years ago, and we haven't had the need to return to our 9-to-5 jobs. Everything's going really well for us, and we are just so thankful that we get to work for ourselves and do what we love every day.
What a cool story. That's like when I'm thinking about you buying a camera for Renee, Matt, I think back to like I did the same for my wife, but I probably didn't have enough patience in trying to teach her. So like as a couple, you guys must be, you know, pretty patient or pretty good with that dynamic to make a career and a business together. Like, it's, you know, a lot of people have different opinions on like going into business with your significant other, and like some people just, you know, you can take criticism or advice or whatever from others, but not necessarily your partner. And so that makes that dynamic of teaching or learning from or traveling with or building business with can be challenging for others. So I'm curious what that is like in your world, in your relationship.
I would say we're both pretty stubborn people. We're both pretty passionate people though, and we like to do things, you know, well. Like, we like whatever we kind of pursue in life, we like to get good results and to do things well. So I think in a lot of ways we're very similar in that regard. So we can, because we want what's best for each other and we want what's best for our business, we do kind of just have to suck it up a little bit. And like, we definitely argue. I mean, of course we argue. But I think it's definitely, it comes down to just compromise. Like, we have a lot of different ideas for our business, and we have a lot of similar ideas, and we just meet somewhere in the middle, because yeah, no person is ever going to fully agree with another. Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, neither of us are going to be right 100% of the time. So sometimes you just have to admit that maybe you might be the one that's going to be wrong on this one and go with the person who seems to know or be more committed to an idea or something like that. We were lucky. We kind of fell into each other's lap in high school. And it just seems the dynamic has worked ever since. So yeah, I think we're also partly lucky in that we just seem to, we work together. But yeah, it's also, yeah, compromise and just trusting each other as well.
Yeah. And we both have different areas that I think we know more about in the business. Like, Matt, to this day, knows more. He's definitely more versed in like camera settings and editing than I am. So even though, like, sometimes quite frequently he'll ask for my advice on what I think of something with editing or a composition, but still, like, I can refer to him a lot for the technical side of things, and then I know a lot more about the blogging and the writing side of things, and maybe a little bit more about kind of marketing side of things. So we kind of just work with each other on what things we're each good at. And we definitely just have to trust each other that, you know, that the person has really put their effort in to be educated on that topic and isn't just winging it too much.
Yeah. So regarding that, like, the differentiation of your work, like, how many of your projects that come in are like engaging the both of you versus individually siloed in the deliverables? Because I know, like, you know, Matt on MatthewHandel.com, it's you're more focused on your landscape and travel photography, whereas Renee, like you mentioned, your site definitely is, it's got the blog and, like, you know, drop an email to get a guide, and it's like that typical kind of like email nurturing and more audience funnel and the marketing side of the world, right? So I'm curious where the overlap is, and if you ever have like individual projects.
Yeah, nearly all of our projects yeah, involve both of us to some degree. Whether that's, you know, maybe the person who approached us about the job was through Renee, but maybe they wanted her in the photos, so I needed to take those photos, or there was just certain elements that we were both involved in.
Yeah, and even though the blog is, it lives on my website, if we're really busy and we've had a lot going on, I might ask Matt to help me get some photos ready for a blog post, or he might help draft a blog post for me or something like that. I would say pretty much everything we do, we're both involved. It's pretty rare that there's a project that we don't have anything to do with, like the other person. So I don't think a lot of people realize that when they look at our channels. They just see that I've posted something, or Matt's posted something, or I've done something. They don't necessarily see all the work that Matt puts in behind the scene, or that I put in. So yeah, it's definitely a joint effort. And I think there's absolutely no way we'd be able to create as much and this just the same quality and amount of content that we do if we were working solo and didn't have assistance, say.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you guys kind of, because you found each other too in high school, it kind of sounds like you grew up together too. So there's like this different dynamic where from the outside looking in, I was thinking, well, oh, they probably met like while they're both traveling and just happened to work or whatever. And I feel like that is probably one of the factors that, you know, it is helpful in the give and get of the relationship, is that what we grew up together, we went through all these changes together. So we know each other so well. So there's this like deep level of understanding.
Well, we knew each other in high school, and then we went through separate colleges together. We did our first overseas, you know, sans parents kind of traveling together. We moved to another country together. We're doing things now like buying houses together. Like we've literally had to grow up together and to go through all those normal challenges and growing up things that you do in your 20s together. And it hasn't always been easy, but it's been amazing.
Yeah, not everyone grows together, and we've just been fortunate enough that we've always fed off each other and we grew in the same direction. So sometimes that's not a choice for a lot of couples. That's just, you know, you grow up how you grow up and you evolve how you evolve. And we were lucky enough that it just happened to be in the same direction.
Yeah. Well, that's really beautiful. And I would say probably hard to come by. But also I want to go back to the quitting of the jobs. I love these types of stories. I don't know why I'm a Locke fan. I'm always like a big fan. But so Matt, for you, I mean, it sounds like you were like fed up anyways, and these people were asking way too much of you. So you're like, well, to hell with you. I'm going to go do what I want to do. But for you, Renee, I mean, you obviously had to study to be a speech therapist. And was there a more trepidation, if you will, behind leaving your job? And what was that thought process like in moving to, I know it was supposed to be a short stint, but then ended up being forever. what was the thought process there?
Well, I mean, it wasn't something that we took lightly, because I studied speech language pathology. I got my degree in Australia, so that obviously took quite a while. And then I think one of the main reasons we were able to move to America and get the green cards that we got was because of my degree in speech therapy. And it was the largest part of our income when we were living in Colorado. It helped us live. So
yeah, that was the reason that I was able to start to pursue photography in the first place, was that Renee's income was enough to sustain us both for that short time that I wasn't really earning that much money.
It certainly wasn't, I didn't earn a crazy income or anything, but for us who were just living in a small one bedroom apartment and we didn't have, you know, crazy costs, we were able to live off my income. So, and also, like on top of that, I actually really enjoyed my job. I loved I worked with adults in a previous position, and then the last job I was working with kids, and it was really rewarding, and I just loved those relationships. I really loved helping people and making a difference. So yeah, it definitely wasn't something we jumped into lightheartedly. And I think in the back of my mind, I always thought I would go back to it. So I wasn't too sad about leaving. I was just really excited at the prospect of kind of working on photography and blogging full time. And then after a while, when it became apparent that I wasn't going to go back to that, I was initially a little bit sad, thinking, oh man, like I did all these years and this money of, you know, going to college and getting to a point in my career that I was quite happy with. And I've just kind of thrown it all away. But then at the same time, I can confidently say that I love this job more. So it's one of those things that I don't regret it because it got us to where we are today. But yeah, I mean, it is a little sad to think about kind of giving all that up.
We still pay the yearly fee to keep
you up with it. Still registered. Like I pay the yearly fee to keep up my registration just in case I ever want to go back to it. It's a nice little safety net.
Now, what was the timeline? Like what year was that all that went down?
So I left my job in mid-2016 and Matt had left his job. Well, he had been fired from his job earlier on in that year. So I guess there was about a 6-month period that we had Matt pursuing his photography career and me kind of trying to do the 9-to-5 still. And then we, as of the July that year, we both set off. Initially, we went on a road trip to Canada for a month, and then that turned into a month in New Zealand, and then that turned into multiple months in Australia, and then
on and on.
Yeah, and then
we couldn't get to that, but yeah, it just kept going.
So I'm curious about, you know, the process, because like if that all happened in 2016, and you know it's been about 3 years that you've been doing this, and it's not, you know, tools and software these days make it easier than ever to spin up a new website and to, you know, edit some pretty nice photos or write a blog. Like that's not like, you know, a high barrier to entry there, but to do it really well and to like have the success from an audience and business standpoint that you've had in that amount of time is fairly unique. And it's not everybody that has the skill set or the motivation to learn the skill set. So I'm curious, you know, while you're learning photography and tinkering with that, and while you're kind of like jumping ship from a, you know, a career to do something almost entirely different, what was the process like for you to figure out, you know, how to start a really nice website, like how to design it really nice, like how to work the, you know, people might take amazing photos, but not everybody builds a huge audience, right? Like, so what was kind of that journey of figuring out all the pieces of this puzzle to grow to where you have in the last 3 years?
Yeah, that's always the most daunting part of jumping into this career, is that there's no book or like course or anything on how to create your own, you know, business. And I mean, I guess some people sell them now, but back in the day, it wasn't nearly as common, and
no one was selling
online business, you know, how to start your Instagram and travel, you know, that was not a thing when we were starting. And so it's just a completely new world. Yeah, as you said, we didn't know how to make a website or anything like that. So it's just a lot of self-learning, and because you're passionate about it, you care enough to spend that time to, you know, work all day and all night to Google how to build a website. And you know, these are the crazy things that you just don't understand when you start that business. And it's the hardest thing as well is, you know, you start getting emails from companies about they want to do this thing with your photo, and you like have no idea what you should be charging them or how that even works, like contracts and invoices and all this kind of stuff. It's just blows your mind, and it really is a challenge. But once you get through that initial hurdle of understanding how the process works and what you should be charging and all that kind of stuff, it really is just going through the motions.
And I think to add to that, we were absolutely winging it. Like absolutely.
Yeah. I think everyone is that starts their own business to a degree.
And we were definitely just learning things as we went. And, you know, to a degree, we are still winging it to this day. I just think we obviously just know a lot more now than we did, but still, like on a weekly basis, things come up that we haven't had experience in. Obviously, publishing our first book recently was just like, oh my gosh, we had no idea what we were doing. And I think something for us is just asking for help. And we do know other people in the industry that we can send a message or maybe jump on a friend call with and say, like, hey, what would you charge this client? Or, hey, what did you use for your, you know, online commerce or whatever for selling something, and really having that conversation. Because, yeah, at the end of the day, we never really know what we're doing until we're faced with that obstacle of, oh, hey, we need to sell this or do this.
And back when we first started, we didn't really know anyone. So it was all just, teaching ourselves, Googling, and then just trial and error. You know, maybe you tell this client this thing back then, and now looking back on it, it was like, that was a stupid thing to do. But at the same time, that's how you learn what works and what doesn't.
And I think some people, I do get messages and things or emails as well, people kind of wanting to know, you know, what the secret recipe is, or how to kind of fast track everything, or how to learn everything at once. You know, and there's no just like learning it overnight. And I think a large part of maybe why we've found success is because we know how to take initiative. Like, if we don't know how to do something, we'll Google it or we'll buy a course that explains how to do it. You know, I had no idea 2 years ago how to market my blog on Pinterest, and Pinterest is such a great source for blogs. So I bought like a $200 or $300 course, and I learned how to do it. So I had to invest time and money into learning that part of my business. And when it came to upgrading my blog to something that was more professional, I initially did it myself, and then I still wasn't happy with the outcome. So I hired someone. I invested that money to have someone do it for me. So I think some of it's initiative, and some of it is kind of seeing that investment for what it's worth and going for it.
Now, how casual are you with your business content versus, like, do you have a you know, strict calendar of deliverables that you hold yourself to? Like, it's like a blog every week and an Instagram post every day and a newsletter every week. And like, do you have that kind of like content calendar, or are you guys just kind of doing whatever?
I think it's one of those things. It's like in the back of your head, you're always like, yeah, I'd like to get a blog post. Like, I'm speaking for Renee here, but she'd like to get a blog post up every week and whatever. But at the end of the day, when it's just the two of us, that's just not how it works. Like, sometimes, and it usually works like this, we'll get a rush of work at this, you know, at one time, and we're just working so hard on getting all that done. And then so blog posts won't go up for like weeks, and all of a sudden there'll be a bunch there ready to go because of the work. But yeah.
We try to keep a schedule, but I guess what Matt's saying is that it's hard to stick to it, and it doesn't. Every time I've tried to keep up a really strict content calendar, the fact is that we often don't even know what we're doing every day until the day comes up. Like, a lot of our photography is based on the weather. You know, we initially thought we were going to go hiking yesterday, but then something came up and we couldn't. This is for a client job that we're shooting. So sometimes we don't even know what's happening the next day, let alone the next week. So having a really strict, non-flexible content calendar just doesn't work for us. But we do try and kind of keep it, in the back of our minds, like a general, like, oh, hey, we should probably try and post on Instagram, you know, 5 days a week or something like that, and try and stick to it.
That makes sense. Well, I love your just, you know, figure it out attitude. I think that resonates with me really deeply, with everybody that we talk to that kind of has that really just entrepreneurial spirit. And, you know, I was actually in New York a few days ago at Gary Vaynerchuk's offices, working with him and his teams. And the director of their like emerging tech program said, it was a quote that I wrote down, and it said, it's not rocket science as long as you're interested and motivated. And I felt like that was like, so just like, I want that like painted on my wall over here, because it's so true. Like, if
get
you
it tattooed, Jonathan.
Yeah, maybe, maybe that'll be my first tattoo, but it's just,
sorry, I'm interrupting.
No, it's okay. I was just saying, it's like, if you're interested and motivated, you will figure it out. You will like buy that course or Google and go down the rabbit hole of learning this, or watch the how-to video on YouTube, or hire the specialist to like help you make it happen. And if you're not that interested and not that motivated, it's just not going to happen. And if you have interest without motivation, it's also not going to happen. Then that becomes the people asking you, like, hey, what's the secret recipe?
Yeah. The secret recipe is passion, and everything else you'll work out.
And I think, I mean, every single post that, like, blog post or Instagram post or whatever that I put up, there's always someone, particularly if I'm talking about something exciting that's just happened, but there's always at least one person, usually more, that says, "You and Matthew are so lucky." And I agree. We are definitely lucky. Like, we're lucky we met each other in high school. We're lucky that we were able to move to America. We're lucky that we were even, you know, born into middle-class families and in a first world country. And we're lucky in so many ways. But I think, you know, if you break down nearly everything that's happened to us in terms of our careers and traveling and, you know, where we are from our business perspective, yes, there has been some luck. But there's also been a lot of initiative and there's been a lot of hard work, and it didn't just happen magically. It didn't just like fall on our laps. You know, we had to really like set that goal of what we wanted and, you know, set out to achieve it. So there's definitely an aspect of luck, but I think that's just one part of it.
Yeah. And I think that those people that, you know, reach out and say like, well, how do I do this? You know, to someone like you guys, like that person doesn't have that, right? Like that they're looking for like the easy answer. And that's what we see on Instagram, right? That it looks so perfect and beautiful, beautifully crafted. But that's just like, it's like the iceberg, you know, it's like 10% of what is actually happening and going on and behind the scenes and all of that. So I think feel like that's a pretty good indication that someone is like not as motivated or is not understanding like how to go after it as much as they should. But speaking of the way that your Instagrams look, I was talking to Jonathan earlier, you know, there's a lot of influencers, especially now, right? Or people who are, you know, photographers and they have beautiful photos. And we've had a few of them, obviously, on the podcast. And then there's, you know, some people who are newer in the game or what have you. And the other thing, too, is there's something that's like a tell for hard work of someone like you guys, where you I was scrolling back years and okay. I was trying to figure out, like, when did they start, you know, actually editing photos and doing the thing? And I can usually go back with newer people who are trying this route to be, say, oh, this is when they like really started to get into it. You guys have been hustling for a long time. I was like scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, and I could not find the like, you know, where it kind of like, it's still beautiful, but it like tips over into the, oh, this is like incredibly aesthetically pleasing.
That's funny that you say that, because we can definitely see the moment.
It's just, you know, I've gone through different editing phases and stuff, which changes the look of the photos. But I think it just comes down to partly also that a lot of people you'll see on Instagram have just picked up their camera at a certain point. You know, maybe they haven't even been doing it very long. Whereas I did this for took photos and was really interested in that for a while before I even got onto Instagram. So I feel like, you know, I definitely hadn't perfected anything, and I definitely had a lot of learning to do, but I feel like I'd kind of breached that little hump, you know, of not knowing anything to at least looking like you partly know what you're doing before I even got onto Instagram.
Well, that's a super interesting distinction, because it's like you just were passionate about photography and then Instagram became a platform to share your photos. Whereas so many people these days, Instagram is the goal, and they get a camera and get into photography because they want to like grow their account and take better photos because of Instagram. So like for you, you weren't doing it because of Instagram. It was just, oh, now there's Instagram.
Yeah. I had to
convince him to get on Instagram.
Yeah. I was a bit of a snob. Like I was fully into like landscape photography, you know, fun out landscape photography back then. I was like, no one on Instagram knows what they're doing. And like, it's dumb. Like it's just a stupid closed mind way of looking at it. But that's just the way I did back then, cause I was dumb and young and whatever. But, yeah, Renee finally convinced me to get on there, and, yeah, the rest is history.
Yeah. And I think, it was the same thing that happened with my travel blog as well, because when we first took the first time we visited the US in 2012, we actually started, do you even remember?
Yeah.
We actually started a blog. It was like thehanals.com. Or something. I don't know. It might still exist. Please no one Google it.
It's probably not there, I hope.
But we essentially, it was like, we were gone for 3 months. So we just shared like a weekly kind of report almost with photos.
It was just for our family. We just did it just
but
so
I
they could
share it with friends and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It was just for fun. It was more like a travel journal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when we had moved to America and living in Colorado, we were doing all these cool hikes and camping trips and stuff. And, you know, I wasn't trying to do Instagram like professionally or necessarily to have like a professional travel or outdoor blog. But, you know, I was still getting questions from people like, oh, what did you think of that hike? Or like, what sleeping bag would you recommend and stuff like that? So I started a blog just to kind of have that community and to share our adventures, almost like a way to be able to remember it, you know, like a journal. And then it evolved. So I don't think anything of what we began in the first place was like we, and not that I don't think there's anything wrong with people being like, I want to start a travel blog and I'm going to make it really successful from the get-go. I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I do think it takes you on a different journey if you just start for the love of it versus wanting it to be a business straight away.
When did you feel that you like really found your voice as well as how it connected with the audience? Because I travel blogged for years through Explore Inspired, and it took me a long time of pivoting from X, Y, and Z through all of my interests of what I like to share to figure out what people actually like to read. And I feel like, you know, you figured out your niche of, you know, young engaged travelers and interested in photography and, like, I feel like it takes time of, because you could share a million different stories when you're traveling, but you don't necessarily share everything because you learn what your audience wants to engage with, right?
Yeah, and we were actually just having this conversation in the kitchen the other day that both of us, but I think particularly my audience, it's quite weird when you really think about it, because we have this audience that loves the outdoors and they love nature and they love national parks and they love hiking and they love camping. But then we have this audience that loves when we travel to like tropical places and they love when we go to some kind of pretty cities. And recently we were in French Polynesia and a huge part of our audience really loved us staying at kind of the luxury resorts and stuff. And then people love when we post about hiking and camping gear, but then I get just as many people asking what dress I'm wearing in a photo. So it's really weird that, you know, you're always told to be really specific with building your audience in a really specific area. But I actually think particularly my brand is kind of breaking the rules in that I have a very eclectic following and people that are interested in literally just like us and our lives, like anything that we're interested in, we seem to have an audience that wants to kind of follow that journey. And I think you asked at what point do you think people really started connecting with our voice?
Mm-hmm.
You might disagree with me, Matt, but I think it was when, we haven't brought this up yet, but we did a trip to all the national parks in 2017, and it was this crazy 7-month project. And obviously, every single day of our lives during that 7 months was focused around this same project. And I think the fact that, you know, we had this end goal and people knew what they were following and they could come along on the ride, I think that's when we got a lot of people kind of tuning in and being interested in more what we have to say as people rather than just the pictures that we were posting. Do you agree, Matt?
Yeah, I'd say so.
People were like connecting more with us and our story of what we were doing rather than like, here's another pretty photo and here's like, you know, a hike or whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense that like when you kind of put parameters around a project, it becomes almost like a show, right? It's something that people can subscribe to and follow along and see what happens next instead of just the, you know, the random moments.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people kind of tuned in for that journey to see, you know, how it all panned out and where we were going. And they've just kind of stuck along for the ride. And now they've moved with us from, you know, finishing that journey and then relocating to Washington and kind of finding our place here and, you know, whatever we're going to get to next. They're just kind of interested to see what happens with us.
I think at the end of the day, we're just doing what we enjoy, and there's a lot of people out there that enjoy similar things. So, yeah, they're just interested to see what we're up to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so now moving, I'm going to cut you off, Jonathan.
Do it.
So I would love to hear more about the National Parks Project. I mean, that is a huge undertaking. So maybe we start with, and I'd love to get to the book piece too, but that in itself, just the project itself, is huge. So I would just love to hear about the catalyst for wanting to do that, and then the hope of like what would come from it, obviously besides good experiences and beautiful places, and then how that translated into the idea of creating a book around it.
Sure, yeah. So I guess the original seed for that started back in mid 2016. So this was like after I'd been fired from my job and Renee was actually still working as a speech therapist. I was contacted about shooting a retreat for a company called Muscle Milk, and they had a company retreat coming up in Colorado in the mountains. And my buddy Garrett King, he's known as Shortstash on Instagram, and I were both living in Colorado, and we both shot this event. And then in December that year, when we were in Australia for Christmas with our family, I was sent an email just like a few days before Christmas from someone saying, "Hey, we have a new," from someone from Muscle Milk, saying, "Hey, we have a new brand coming out called Evolve, and they partner with the national parks and donate some of their proceeds to the national parks. We're thinking of doing a trip, sending someone out to do a trip around going to all the national parks. Would you be interested?" And of course, I mentioned it to Renee. We're like, "Of course, we're interested." So, yeah, from then it just turned into. He was like, "You've got a week, come up with how much you think it'll cost us and if you think you can even do it, how long it'll take, all that kind of stuff." And then Renee and I just spent, a whole week just trying to work out the logistics of how to make a trip to every single national park, which it's...
I actually vividly remember sitting in Matt's parents' living room and we both had our laptops open and we were... It was so hard to even just find out how many national parks there were because there were so many outdated blog posts and even like the National Park Service website kind of didn't have all the information. And eventually we were like, okay, at the time we worked out there was 59 national parks, but we were sitting there together and I remember Matt being like, "Oh my gosh, there's a national park in Samoa." And we're like, "No way." And then we're like, "Oh, there's one in the Virgin Islands." And "Oh, there's like eight or how many is there in Alaska?" There's a lot. But we had no idea that these places even existed, most of them. Well, I would say at least half of the national parks we hadn't even heard of. And I think a lot of Americans haven't even heard of a lot of them. So, it's really funny to even think back about that first Excel spreadsheet that we made of like, "Oh, how long would it take?"
It's one of those things. I think we actually got a couple of mentions on it in our book that they appreciated. We put in there was like, how long do you even spend in each of these places? You haven't been there. You don't have this visual representation of how big they are or what you need to see. So that takes a long time to kind of look through every single park and try and work out how long you think you'll need there. And the hardest part of it all was Alaska, because most of those national parks don't have any trails. You can't drive to them. There's no roads. The only way to get there is you hire some tiny bush plane company to fly you out to the middle of nowhere. And those rates just aren't available online. You have to email each company and be like, "Hey, I want to go to this national park and do this trip." And that all just took so long. So it took a long time.
Yeah, logistically, it was the craziest, biggest, time-consuming project we've ever done. And essentially, Matt came up with like the final this is what it could look like itinerary, like very, very basic. But he was like, I think we can fit it into 7 months in like a weather window of seeing the parks. Because there's some parks that close in winter and or just like you just wouldn't want to visit them. So you kind of came up with this 7 month plan. And we emailed it to Evolve, like the representatives at Evolve. And then it was New Year's Eve.
It was around New Year's Eve.
Matt got like a Skype message or a text message from our representative there, and he was like, yeah, we're gonna do it. And we were just like, okay.
Yeah, I guess this is our life for the next year. So.
Yeah.
So did you have to put together a budget for them and say like, all right, it's going to take this long and it's going to cost like this much logistically and here's like what you're going to get out of it?
Yeah, that's the hard part too, is that there's, as I said, there's not prices for everything online. It's you just have to kind of work out roughly. And Renee and I had done a lot of travel before, like our 3 month road trip to America. So, you know, we have a rough idea. We had points of reference for how much we usually spend and on food and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that took a lot of research. And so, yeah, I essentially had to get back to him with, this is what the trip will actually cost. These are deliverables. It's a hard word to say. And that's how much our services are going to cost. And then, yeah, he ultimately greenlighted everything. So,
yeah. And, it felt really weird that we were going to undertake this project. I mean, we had already, so that project started in the April of 2017. And at that point, we'd already been living in, you know, some types of vehicles since the July of the year before. We'd initially been kind of like living out of our Toyota 4Runner. And then we were living in a van in New Zealand for a month. And then we had a small car in Australia on a trip to Tasmania, and then we spent a month in Iceland living in a car. So we had like lived in a lot of cars together and kind of camped, but we hadn't kind of had our own van or anything for an extended period of time. So it was also a lot of working out like how that would even work, you know, like how does living in a van even work, and how do we source that van? And luckily the awesome folks at Go Westy, they're based in California, they gave us this rad 1988
Volkswagen camper. So that was a awesome little vehicle for
she
the
was
trip.
Just rented to us for the 7 months, but yeah, she was so much fun. And yeah, I mean, what else do you want to know? It was a crazy trip.
Well, so did all, like, was roaming America in your mind the whole time when you were planning this, or was that part of the deliverable, or how did that come about?
So no, that's a completely separate thing. So that just came up after it. So this trip was completely run by Evolve. And
for anyone may as well mention what it is, like Evolve or, they're like plant-based protein drinks. You can get them in like Whole Foods and stuff like that. And they are a really cool company. They donate to the national park. So that's who we were working for on the national parks trip.
Yeah. So I had a bunch of we both had a bunch of deliverables we had to do for them. So like social posts, and we were just kind of the whole job was focused around doing a really cool trip, but also bringing awareness to this new company. And yeah, that was ultimately the goal of the trip. And upon the end of the trip, I think it was Renee that got an email, was it a few months after the trip?
It was quite a while after the trip. We had the publisher that we ended up going with, they're called Lanou Publishing. They're based in Belgium and the Netherlands. They, I just got like a cold email one day from who ended up being our publisher. And he was like, hey, have you ever thought about publishing a book just about your travels, Renee? And I'm like, no, like I've never thought about that. And I certainly just didn't feel like individually I had, enough travels that I'd even want to write a book about necessarily. And then I think I just said it out loud to Matt, and he was like, oh, you know, we could write a book about the national parks. And so I had a phone call with them, just, you know, a general kind of phone call, and I mentioned it. And he was like, oh, yeah, like, that sounds pretty cool. We can explore that option. And then, yeah, that was in, like, the December of 17. And then it pretty much took the whole of most of last year and a bit into this year of periodically working on the book to make that come to life. And obviously it happened because we were able to go on that client road trip, but essentially the book is, yeah, it's our book. We wrote it.
Yeah, it's a completely separate project.
Yeah, it's a completely separate project.
And who was the publisher that you worked with on that?
Lanou.
So it's spelled Lanno.
Yeah.
Nice. So this just recently came out, right? When did you actually drop that?
Well, it actually came out a little while ago in Europe, because obviously it's printed in Europe because they're a European publisher. But it takes forever to get shipped to America on because they have to send it by a boat. So it came out in Europe, I think, in March, but it only just kind of hit
Amazon and all the bookstores here,
like really in the last week in the US. So even though it's been out for a while, it's kind of new to America, which is funny because it's a book about America, but it came out
here. Yeah, I think even people in Australia who ordered through like Book Depository got it before most people in America.
Yeah, which is pretty funny, but oh well.
That's funny. Well, congrats on that. So how has the reception been so far? It looks like it's amazing. I'm gonna have to get a copy.
Yeah,
it sold out on Amazon before they even arrived in the country. So we were pretty psyched. It made it like the first day it went on, the first day we posted about it on social media, it made a number one bestseller of like new travel guides. And yeah, it sold out its first kind of shipment to America before they even landed in America. And it's back, like the second shipment's coming now and they're back on sale. But yeah, I think it's exceeded our expectations, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it's just it's been so great. We get sent messages, like multiple messages every day of people like receiving it and genuinely being excited about the book. And that's been the best part of it, I think, is that we're getting these messages from people who, whether they're a follower of ours or not, they're really interested in what we've put out and they're actually going to take something from that book and hopefully inspire, you know, their own similar kind of road trips, maybe not to every national park in one go, but whether they go out on the weekend to Mount Rainier, you know, they've got a little guide there to help with some hikes and when we recommend they should go. And it's been, yeah, so great just seeing that that's actually going to be helping people.
And that was one of the catalysts in the first place of us even wanting to go down the avenue of publishing, because it's a massive project, like one that it was much bigger than we expected. It's not.
It's a massive project and it's not a lot of money.
Yeah, we'll be frank with everyone. There's not much money in publishing. It's certainly not a large part of our business income. It's a very small part of our business income. So it's more of a passion project. But one of the catalysts for even doing it in the first place was during our national parks trip. I couldn't even tell you the amount of messages we've received of people saying, you inspired me to go to my first ever national park, or you inspired me to go out hiking this weekend after seeing that, you know, photo you put up from Mount Rainier or something. And to get those messages from people who are excited to explore the outdoors and excited to be out in nature and to protect nature and, you know, be a steward for it, that is so exciting to us and really at the core of why we wanted to do it in the first place.
Wow, those messages, I feel like that's so heartwarming to receive stuff like that. That must make a lot of the hours feel, I'm sure it feels worth it already, because it's just like having this product that you actually can hold in your hands and is amazing. But I mean, it probably just kind of like continues that feeling even more so when people are taking so much away from it. So congrats on that, guys.
For sure. Thanks.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys, so you have the blog, you guys are photographers, you are getting published in magazines, you have private clients, you're home owners now, you're authors also of an actual book. Like what can you not do? But what is next, or what are other channels that we haven't explored yet?
I think we've like talked about most of the channel, but in terms of what's next is, we don't know.
Yeah. A lot of weeding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now comes the Pinterest boards, right? Here's the work.
No.
You know, we, to be quite honest with you guys, we have had a really crazy last few months, and we have really just felt like in the last couple of weeks we've been able to come down from it all and just kind of decompress a little bit. And we actually had a business meeting, the two of us, last week to just, you know, start talking about where we want to go next with projects and things, because it's really hard to think about that kind of stuff while you're, you know, you're pulling like, you know, crazy, crazy long hours and you're so focused on, you know, certain projects. It's hard to think beyond that. So yeah, we're kind of in the planning phases at the moment, but we've certainly got a lot of just trips and kind of smaller projects going on. But in terms of really large stuff, we're in the brainstorming
phase.
Yeah,
sure.
I love that you guys are sitting down and having a business meeting, because I mean, can we explore that a little bit? Because I mean, you're married. You guys are living together. You do all your projects together. Like, what does carving out that time mean and look like for you guys?
It's funny because we live in like a 3-bedroom like townhome, and it's 3 stories. So we each have an office. The whole point of having a 3-bedroom when it's just us is that we each have our own office, and I'm on the bottom floor and she's on the very top. So we have this little like level to ourselves, and then a little meeting area in the middle with the kitchen and the and the dining room and the living room. And yeah, every now and again, we just be like, hey, we've got these bunch of things that's kind of in the works. We need to sit down and just chat about how this is going to work. Or
'cause we talk all day about projects, but I think sometimes we need to sit more kind of like face to face and really delve into things. And yeah, I mean, if you really want to know what it looks like, it's literally just us. He walks upstairs, I walk downstairs, and we sit at our dining table with our notepads and planners and our phones and, you know, sometimes our laptops and things, and we just talk about stuff. And it's pretty funny, people laugh that we have separate offices, but you know, we literally lived with each other 24/7 in very tiny spaces for like 18 months. And through that process we learned that from like a productivity and creativity and, you know, distractions and that kind of thing standpoint, we work quite differently. So
Renee likes it nice and bright, and she likes it to be pretty quiet, whereas I like it relatively dark, especially when I edit, and I like the music pumping. So,
so you can see how sharing an office is like not scenario.
Yes, that's definitely great.
So I'm super curious, the way that you talked about like some of those deliverables that Emily had asked about, you know, the different projects and channels, and how you even spoke about the book, how it's not necessarily like a major revenue driver. I'm interested to know like how you think about and prioritize when you're planning for these different things, because you're kind of, you know, you have one business, but it's serving two different audiences, right? Like you have the agent, the brands, and, you know, PR agencies or whoever the companies that you're working with to actually take on the projects where they hire you to go blog about something or travel someplace and give them actual assets that they can then republish and use stories for their marketing purposes. And that serves them. But then you also have the side of your world that is just creating helpful content, blogs, guides, the book, workshops around photography, events that are more for your audience. So I'm curious how you think about the like dividing the two.
I'll just touch on one note quickly. I feel like it's also a big part of that is trying to work with brands as much as possible that your audience will be getting something out of too. So when I think of that, I especially think of Renee's relationship with a company called Backcountry, and they're an online outdoor gear company. And she's been working with them for probably a year now, and we genuinely love Backcountry. We shopped with them for years before Renee even started working with them. And she gets so many messages, myself to a lesser degree, but especially Renee, about what kind of gear she uses and how she camps, because like it's a really daunting thing to do when you haven't done it before. And yeah, so when she's doing like sponsored blog posts for a company that she actually loves, and that the content she's producing will genuinely be helping the followers that are reading it, then I think that's like the best case scenario.
Yeah, because it's obviously I'm we're getting paid to do it, but it's something that, yeah, like an example of a backcountry collaboration is I've done like some beginner's guides to hiking and beginner's guide to camping and things like that. These are things I would create on my website anyway, but I get to work with a really rad company who I get to feature the gear that they sell, which is the gear I use anyway. So it's a win-win. So what Matt said, essentially a large part of that is we get reached out by so many companies that, we say no to for collaborations. And I think that's what people don't necessarily see, when they just look at someone's Instagram or blog, is how much work you say no to for the work that you say yes to. And it definitely comes down to, a company's ethics and, you know, if we feel like we would never endorse something that we don't personally use or wouldn't recommend to others. And I think as soon as you start doing that, like as soon as people see you promoting things that is clearly stuff that you would never use, you very quickly lose trust. So we're very, very careful about what projects we take on, and we've had to turn down some pretty crazy, like from a financial perspective, some pretty crazy projects purely for the fact of,
An example is like alcohol companies generally pay a lot of money, but I don't really drink alcohol. It's not an ethical choice. It's just, I don't really like it. So I'm not going to work with an alcohol company and promote that product when I don't actually use it or wouldn't enjoy it.
Yeah, because immediately it would come across as ingenuine. So
yeah, well, even if people don't know I don't drink, I just wouldn't feel right about that.
Yeah, so I think we consult each other every time a potential project comes out. We don't make business choices that large with that consulting each other, and the conversation usually goes something along the lines of, hey, do you want to work with them? Like, yep, cool, all right, how could we do that in a way that's going to be authentic to our audience, in a way that we actually want to do, like we getting to go somewhere that is of interest to us, or like doing an activity that is of interest to us. How can we kind of like get all those factors together and make it be a really exciting project? So yeah, I mean, each of those like little sponsored posts and trips you see, there's so much thought and so much planning and, consideration that goes into it, that I think a lot of people don't realize.
A lot of meet me in the kitchen meetings.
Yeah.
It's a dining table.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. We'll think this is funny too, but we text and we call each other a lot, even though we're both home, because we're up like, it's three stories, man. Like, we don't want to keep running up and down the stairs all day. So we call each other a lot, don't we?
Yeah. There's a lot of business calls to each other in the same house.
That's amazing. One of the things that Jonathan and I were talking about before we got on the phone with you guys is the energy and engagement. So we were talking about just our own Instagram, and we have like such a fraction of what you guys both individually have on there so far. I mean, it'll grow, but it's fine. So, but we get good amount of messages, and there's some great people who are trying to reach out and say like, this inspired me, or you guys should have this person on, or maybe I would like to be on the podcast or whatever. And sometimes even us, we find it like, okay, well, I have to think about that and my answer, and I have to get back to them in like a couple days, because I just don't have the time to like engage in that conversation right now. So how do you guys prioritize the actual engagement of your audience?
Yeah, not even just the time. I think sometimes it's just like the mental space or the mental capacity to give it the time that it needs, right?
Totally.
Yeah, I guess it just comes down to priorities. Like sometimes we're in the middle of a certain project that just really needs our 100% focus. And those times, maybe we just disappear from Instagram for a couple of days if we need to, like, but we really do try to engage with the audience as much as possible. I think you'll see that Renee and I respond to pretty much every comment on our posts. And I know we both try to respond to pretty much every single DM that's sent to us, as long as it's not weird and creepy.
Yes.
I just think it's prioritizing and to our best of our ability.
But I think also what you touched on, Jonathan, that sometimes you just don't have the mental capacity or will to in that moment want to do it. And I think, and I've heard, you know, so many other creatives talk about this, but there's definitely like an overwhelm that comes with being on social media and to run a business on social media. And we, I think probably me more so than Matt, but we definitely struggle with that feeling of, you know, it's, oh my gosh, it's all just so much, you know, to that keep on top of. And sometimes our email inboxes are ridiculously overflowing and there's hundreds of DMs and I haven't replied to comments on a couple of photos, and it's like four blog posts due, and there's days where I kind of just want to cry a bit. But I think for the most part it's not like that, and everyone has those days no matter what profession you work in, you know, what job you're in. The fact that, you know, we get to prioritize that time ourselves, like I get to be like, okay, this is overwhelming, but you know, we have a flexible schedule, or I have Matt that can help me, or vice versa. That makes it a lot easier on those days that are a little bit harder to put everything into perspective and be like, yeah, but we get to work for ourselves. So even though we like don't really have weekends and we work like too much every day, it's, we get to work for ourselves doing something that we love. And that in itself is something that very few people get to do.
Yeah, it's so easy to get like self-deprecating or feel so guilty when you have all that piling up. Like I know, you know, not even just like on social, but like sometimes I'll get a text or an email and like you look at it, but like in the moment maybe you don't have, like you're doing something else that you like can't reply, but then it's already been marked as read and then it's not at the top of your list and then you forget about it. And then and then when you like realize that you never replied, you feel so bad.
Yeah. I think we've gotten pretty good at trying to get the gist of a conversation, and if you need to respond ASAP, like just from the first little bit it shows you. Yeah. It's like if it looks important, ignore it until I can actually respond.
And I think it's like I feel you on that. I get really hard on myself when I've like let people down or not responded to an email, or if someone sends me a really sweet message and then I just never respond and then I realize that, I get really mad at myself. So I think one thing that I know I do anyway, that I definitely just kind of schedule it in my planner, or I put a note in my calendar or something. Like literally I will just say reply to such and such, because it's so stupid that we even need to do that. But I think when your life is just kind of busy and you've got a lot going on, you have to schedule right down to those like really simple things, or sometimes they don't get done.
Yeah, totally. Let's see. I know that we're kind of running close to, if not over, our time here. But before we get to our like last question, which I know you know what it is, I want to drop some quick like value rapid fire for anybody who is, you know, looking at the career that you've designed, the life that you've created together, and are in that same process of they're interested, they're motivated, and now they're trying to figure it out. They're you 3 years ago. So like, what, you know, let's talk digital ecosystem. Like, what do you use for your website?
So I use WordPress and Matt uses Squarespace.
All right. Battle.
Yeah. Well, Renee has someone that actually is in control of her website. No. Terms of, like,
I just hired someone who does like the security and the hosting for my website, but like otherwise I completely run.
Gotcha. Yeah. WordPress and Squarespace. Awesome. So what do you use for your newsletter? Like if somebody downloads your travel photo guide and you're engaging with them?
Switch to MailChimp. But before that I was using ConvertKit. But I switched to MailChimp for a few reasons and I'm pretty happy with it. And Matt, you don't have a newsletter, do you?
Not really.
Yeah.
All right. And what do you do for e-commerce?
We have WooCommerce set up and Stripe.
So WooCommerce as a plugin on the WordPress website for selling. Yes. And Stripe for collecting payments, right?
Yes.
That's for the web, the blog stuff. For our actual business, like invoicing and stuff, it's done through QuickBooks.
Yeah. That's different. Yeah.
Gotcha. So what do you shoot and edit with?
We edit with Adobe Lightroom and Photoshop, and we shoot with we're Sony Alpha ambassadors, so we have we have a few different Sony cameras, but the one we mostly shoot with is the A7R3.
Mm-hmm.
And then
the lenses we would use the most are probably the 2470, like the Sony 2470 2.8, the 16 to 35 2.8, and the 100 to 400 4.5 to 5.6. They're probably the three most used lenses that we have.
Yeah.
And what if you're going on any trip besides your camera, what's like your like, this has to be with me at all times?
Earplugs, eye mask, head, like neck thing for the plane. but I don't know, if we're talking seriously, probably, I don't know, like snacks, noise cancelling, headphones,
laptop,
like either my physical planner or just like a really good digital calendar for that week, with everything planned out.
For some reason, I seem to think my Nintendo Switch, but then I never use it, so it just takes up a bunch of space.
That's aspirational. That's aspirational to have time to do that.
Right.
Every single trip, I'm like, babe, don't pack it. You never use it, and it's so heavy. And he's like, I'm going to use it this time, and he never uses it.
That's so funny. All right, last one. Your go-to productivity app, or even just favorite app on your phone.
Oh, I recently just switched over to using this app called Todoist, and for productivity, and that's going well. But then probably my most used app on my phone, other than, you know, like ones for business, like Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and stuff, I use the 5-Minute Journal app on my phone. So for those who don't know, it's kind of each morning and each night you fill out some different areas. It's kind of touches on gratitude and kind of your plan for the day. It's really quick and easy, but yeah, I use that every single day. What about you, Matt?
We use the Notes app, just the normal Notes app on our iPhone all the time. That's pretty much how we have potential business things. So, you know, because we're both getting different emails, sometimes it's hard to stay on top of at what status of a potential job we're at. So, you know, we have a little note where we're like, these are the potential jobs we're following up with.
And it's a shared note.
A shared note.
We can both see when each other updates it. Yeah, so we probably use that a lot as
Yeah,
well.
I use that a lot.
Yeah.
I like that. People so often overlook the Notes app, but it's a go-to for me too. Everyone's trying to figure out like what's the better app, but no, it's sometimes it's just Notes.
Yeah, for sure. We use that.
That and the Reminders app. I use the Reminders app all the time. To your point, Renee, before when you were like, respond to this thing, I put notes like send a text to ex friend that I haven't reached out to in a while. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we are at the point where we will ask that last question, but thank you for kind of going through that. We've never really done that kind of rapid fire Q&A thing, but I just was like, I was thinking we might as well, because I'm super impressed with everything that you both have done, you know, across all of your channels, and definitely wanted to have our listeners, you know, get a little inside scoop on what the back end of your business looks like.
Cool.
Yeah.
So the last question, Emily, you got it?
I think I can handle it.
You know this one?
Yeah, I think I have it. What does Stoke mean to you guys?
Yeah, it's funny because we knew this question was coming, because obviously you guys ask it every interview, and we were grabbing takeout pizza last night from this. We have a Mod Pizza down the road from us, and we're standing in line because they were taking forever. And I was like, Matt, they're going to ask us this question about what Stoke means to us, so let's talk about it. So we had a little business meeting in Mod Pizza. And essentially, I think we kind of came to the same conclusion that Stoke for us, and I don't know if it's similar for other people, but it's kind of being able to do what we love and having control over our own lives. That's a big thing for us, is having that freedom to choose what we want to do and to choose things in life that make us happy. We pretty much base every business decision and every decision about where we live and everything we do is based on having that flexibility and freedom and access to things that make us happy. So and also being able to work together and being able to do this career that we love as a duo, because I think that's something that's quite unique and something that we're thankful for.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess if you like the embodiment of that feeling is, for us, when I'm standing on top of a mountain and, you know, the sunset's popping off and everything's going well, that's like the quintessential feeling of that. And it kind of reminds you, it's like, wow, like even though I'm up here, I could be hiking anytime, but like, this is my job. And yeah, that that's always just such a reminder of how lucky we are and how hard we've worked to get to where we are. So yeah, that's always reminds me of what I feel Stoke is.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Every answer is a good answer. I love when I just love hearing the different ones that we get. I mean, sometimes many times I'm just like in awe of what people come up with, and you guys did great. So good job. That meeting at the pizza place really benefited you.
Nothing too poetic here, but it's just
No, but it's real. And I, similar to Jonathan, I'm just super stoked that we got to talk to you guys. I've been following both of you for a long time, and for this to come together in a conversation is lovely. So where can people follow along? Just, is Instagram the best for people to just catch up on everything you guys are up to?
Yeah, I think Instagram is where we kind of post the most live updates, you know, with, because the story function and things like that. So my Instagram is Renee Roaming.
And mine's Matthew Harnell. But if you go to Renee Roaming, you'll find me. It's the easiest way, because I hate trying. No one ever remembers my name or how to spell it.
The spelling is kind of hard.
So. It's easy to just go to Renee Roaming and find me from there.
Yeah, that's the best place.
And is there not a Matthew Roaming that's not available?
There is not. I Mr. You know Roaming? What? I've never actually checked to see if it's taken, but
That's a funny story, actually. He has been called Mr. Roaming before.
Really?
Yeah, it was hilarious. We checked into a hotel in Canada, and it was booked through the tourism board, and for some reason they, even though it was like a joint thing, they must have used my name, but they did it as Renee Roaming instead of Renee Harnell. And the property manager comes out, and she's like, you know, hi, Mrs. Roaming. Hi, Mr. Roaming. And like, she's like the property manager of this really nice hotel. And we were like, don't laugh. But, we had a giggle about it later, because I totally think you should change his name to that. It's great.
Awesome. So yeah, Matthew Harnell and MatthewHarnell.com and Renee Roaming, ReneeRoaming.com for all things. And actually, where can they get the book? Where can we get Roaming America?
Yeah, I mean, probably it's sold so many places. So you can get it on Amazon US, Book Depository, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart. It's pretty much sold everywhere, even like local smaller bookstores. A lot of them have it, or you can just ask and they'll order it. Amazon often has it on sale, like, because they completely control the prices for that. So if you just go on Amazon and put in Roaming America, it's the first one that pops up.
It'll say number one in Belgium travel guides, but you can just ignore that.
they initially categorized it wrong in the US, and it's coming up under Belgium travel guides. So just be rest assured that it's about America.
Well, that's typically what I look for in all my travel guides, is that it's ranking well in Belgium.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's so good. Awesome. Well, we will put all of that in the show notes as well, so our listeners can find everything they need to connect and follow along. So thank you again for taking the time and chatting with us here on the Stokecast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having it.
So, Emily, I gotta be honest, one of the biggest surprises for me after learning a little bit more about Renee and Matt's story is how fast they've been able to make all this happen. I mean, comparatively and relatively, like, just in the last 3 years, really, is when they kind of decided to leave the full-time jobs behind and really go all in and figure out all these different channels and kind of find, you know, their strengths of, as far as, like, you know, Matt being more of the photographer and Renee doing a lot more of the writing and management of kind of the marketing side of things. And like, I don't know. I was impressed that, like, what they have built, their massive audiences, their success with working with tons of different brands and just their lifestyle, as a couple supporting each other and kind of living it up, just came together pretty fast.
But I will say, and they kind of talk about this a little bit in the episode, but the thing that really blew me away is, like, how hardworking they are. I knew they were going to be hardworking. You don't just get to like this level of followers on Instagram or book deal or, you know, whatever it is. Like, you don't get to that level without a lot of hard work. But they were hustling. Like, they were doing the damn thing, you know, and they took some risks, obviously, with Matthew, like leaving his job and, you know, kind of living off of one salary and figuring that out. But they are just, you know, on it. They have a great eye for the content. And then they really, honestly, it seems like from the outside perspective, they were like kind of made to find each other in life because they're seemingly really wonderful creative partners too, which I think is, you know, that can go one of two ways when you're a couple and you start working together. But they kind of like grew up together. And I thought that was really like a lovely part of their story as well.
100%. I love like how they're talking about their like work from home dynamic of being on like the first floor, third floor, like meeting in the kitchen for like conferencing and strategy. Like I dig that. But I was, you know, really excited coming into this episode because I knew just from looking at their channels, not just on social, but also just like, their actual websites and seeing what they were doing. This is why I asked so many like kind of nitty gritty questions at the end. It was the first time I really kind of prodded at that lightning round style, like Q&A, because I knew that they had a lot of value to offer our audience, the people that are potentially thinking about like starting down this path and doing something similar. It takes a lot of time to figure out what you want to use and the tools and what works best and how to integrate the whole funnel and the ecosystem of apps and all of that. And so just kind of prying into like WordPress and WooCommerce and MailChimp and ConvertKit and Stripe and QuickBooks and all these different platforms. I think it was just, it's super valuable to learn about that, to hear how other people are using it. These are all tools that I've tinkered with over the years and have netted out on my favorites and how I connect it all. And I definitely was curious on how they were using it to nurture their audience, to kind of build that funnel, what they're doing to like offer value through a newsletter and how that ladders up to like, you know, the value ladder of promoting a book, and then what happens after they buy the book, and then where does that round out to doing like a photography workshop, or, you know, how do they work with brands? Like, just like the full picture of their business world was just super interesting to me as somebody that's obsessed with mountains and marketing.
I like that, mountains and marketing, and you love alliteration, so that works perfectly for you.
You know me.
I do. But I think that sometimes we have conversations with people who maybe they're athletes first and then they kind of like fell into photography because they're taking pictures of their friends doing cool stuff, or like some people that we talk to, they're hardworking, sure, but they also like kind of fall into some of these like categories of photographer or writer or whatever. It's just kind of a natural extension of what they're already doing. But these guys, like, there was not many or any answers to our questions where they didn't have any idea how they arrived at that part, you know, at that point. You know, they kind of like, it seems like they had like a really thoughtful response to every single question we had, and which was incredible because that just shows you like the level of dedication that they had to building their craft, building their audience, like, you know, having kind of like a scheduled out or 3 to 5 year roadmap goals, things like that, where, you know, some of our other guests are maybe not as organized in that way.
Yeah, so much so. And I think they're just a perfect example of, I guess, you know, when people are kind of leaning into creative projects these days, I mean, it's so competitive. There's so many people out there doing it. And you really have to think about the big picture, the full complete funnel of how to engage an entire audience of, you know, whether it's the people who are super into the like roughing it backpacking stuff, or the people that are really into the tips for like luxury travel. And then like also I appreciated their perspective of looking at the spectrum of client deliverables versus audience content and how they tied together and how it wasn't, you know, I kind of asked them as if I was positioning it as if it was two different things, but they kind of threaded it together in a really refreshing way. but also thinking through the blog and the book and the guides and the workshops and the events and how, like, really to compete today in this kind of content influencer ecosystem, you have to really have the full picture and you have to be thinking about it all. And their story was just refreshing in that sense. And, you know, I really loved talking to them about, like, the kind of the scrappiness and the learner mentality and the resourcefulness. And I know I mentioned that quote, so I'll throw it back to that right now, is that, like, when I was in New York 2 weeks ago, I was at a strategy session with VaynerMedia. So anybody that follows Gary Vaynerchuk, he's a super popular entrepreneur. He was, like, one of the original YouTube, basically he had a YouTube show on called Wine Library, where he just tasted wines, and, like, that blew up because it was, like, early on YouTube. And then he built a wine business with his family business, and then has since been an investor in, like, I think, like, Twitter and Uber and Snapchat and Airbnb and, like, a tons of different success stories. And now he's got a digital agency. So I was out in New York at a strategy session with him and his teams, and his VP at VaynerSmart, which is the more of the emerging technology sector, was talking to us about, like, artificial intelligence and voice assistants and all this kind of stuff. And her name was Claire Mitchell, and she said, "It's not rocket science if you're motivated and interested." And I thought that, like, like, so black and white. Yes, 100%. You're so right. The reason, like, if you can't figure something out, it's probably because you are either not motivated enough or not interested enough. If you have both of those things, you will find a way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that rings true for us, for probably all of our listeners, and certainly for Renee and Matthew. I mean, that like describes them. And that's great. I mean, I think that they have really carved out this kind of seemingly amazing space and amazing community, and they have a lot of engagement too with their communities, and I think that's a really telltale sign of people who are really authentic, but they're super thoughtful and methodical in their approach. And I just really appreciate it, because I think that sometimes you know, the influencer game gets a bit of a bad rep, and I think that there's a lot of hardworking people out there who are like Renee and Matthew, who are just crushing it, doing it really well.
I agree. So guys, definitely go connect with them, because they're amazing. Like, follow along. The content is beautiful and super inspiring, and really you'll learn a lot. So it's Renee Roaming and reneeroaming.com. And then you can find Matthew at Matthew Honnell, MatthewHonnell.com. And then we'll definitely link up in the show notes all their other links, as well as Roaming America, the book. So definitely dive into that. It's just going to be exploreinspired.com/stokecast. And you'll be able to find the latest episode there. Yeah, definitely let us know what you got out of this, because I think that there was a wealth of information delivered to your ears today. And I would really be interested to know what your biggest takeaway was. So shoot Emily or I a message at the Stokecast or on our personals. And let's chat. Let's hear what you got out of today's episode. And be sure, if you are, you know, if you got a lot of value out of this, be sure to share it with somebody else who might, you know, learn something as well, or might be inspired as well. So that's what this is all about. It's sharing the stoke. It's spreading the word. And that's why we do these conversations every single week, to bring it to you so you can share as well.
So keep doing what you're doing, and we love you all. And stick around for next week.
This is a perfect way to end it.
Listen to Jonathan's outro more than mine. And thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Emily Holland.
And I'm Jonathan Ronzio. We'll catch you next week with another episode of the Stokecast.